Bandhu's talk. And it was so nice to see him sitting here and giving the talk. But when you stand here, the world is different. So, thank you so much for coming to this talk which I'm giving. I'm grateful to Kulamitra and the whole Karuna for giving me the opportunity to come over here, funding me. And it's a memorable event in my life to stand in front of you and share what's alive in me. The title of the talk, which I'm given, or maybe Yashobodhi is there, I gave it or you gave me. It's me. Yeah, the title is Beauty Behind the Words, NVC Way, a Non-Violent Communication Way. So it's the beauty behind the words. And there's another tagline which says, words have the power to connect or to create walls. The choice is yours. And I'm just going to do that. But before I say what I want to say, I've got few requests. The first request is, as you know, I'm coming from India, and maybe my English is not that good. That's what I say to myself. And maybe my pronunciation, my grammar. So my request is, don't get caught up in the words. Look behind the beauty of those words. So ignore the grammar, ignore the spellings or pronunciation. Just connect with the beauty of those words. And maybe then we'll have a nice time. Second request, when after I've finished, being an Indian, I don't have time sense. Yeah. So when we say 2 minutes, it could be 2 hours. So if it's too much for you, you can just raise your hand and say, Anirudha, shut up. And I'll sit down. Because I'm a very non-violent person and I'll respect your need. But I've asked Joe, please keep the time and sign when I have to shut up. Yeah, that's all. And let's start. I'm not sure where to start because right now I'm really blank. I prepared this talk in my tent, which was full of water. So it was a swimming pool, and I was preparing my talk last night there. So you can imagine what I'm going to say. But I'll just draw something from Lokabandhu. He was talking about Zinren or Zenrin something, and I'm reminded of a story. Once there was a Zen master, and he was sitting with his disciple. The disciples were sitting in front of him, and the Zen master asked a question to his disciple. He said, when people are angry, why do they shout? When you are angry, why you speak in a loud voice? That was the question. And the disciple raised their hand and said, yes. And he said, because you are angry, you need to shout. And then the other says, because he doesn't listen to me, I have to shout. And he doesn't do things the way I want, that's why I have to shout. So there were so many answers. So this Zen master was just looking, admiring the beauty of those words and his disciple. After everybody has finished, he takes a pause and he says, when you are angry, what happens is your heart goes far away from the other person's heart. Even though physically you are very close to each other, your hearts are very far away. No matter how loud you speak, your words never touch the heart of the other person. And that is the reason you shout. Because you want the other person's heart to listen. So people got the message. And then he said, just imagine when you were in deep love, full of love, compassion. And just imagine or see those two people who are in deep love or full of compassion. Maybe you can see sitting outside on the ground there, the sunset is happening. I know it's not there today, but suppose, and they're just sitting there holding the hands together, they don't say a word, But what they want to convey is conveyed without saying a word. And the reason is, their heart are so close. They are so close to each other. Maybe they are one. They don't have the need to speak, to express themselves with the words. And that's the power of the word. So am I making some sense so far? Great. But we are trained in a different tradition. We don't know how to express love, how to express our deeper feelings. We have our needs, and only way we know to express our need is by shouting, becoming angry, or not saying a word, just keeping quiet to yourself, maybe not talking for maybe a week, a month, or maybe a year. It goes on, you know. It's really interesting. It's not a new thing. For 10,000 years, we've been trained in this kind of thinking, that if you're angry, you have to shout. There's no other way out. When I was a small kid, maybe I was in the 4th standard, maybe 8 years old, and my history teacher, maybe geography teacher, she taught me a lesson. And in the final exam, there used to be a question, and I'm going to ask you that question. Maybe it's very simple because it's from the 4th standard class. So the question is, when you go to the moon, when you're on the moon, and you look at the earth, when you look at the earth, there is a man-made thing, a human man-made thing which you can see from the moon. What's that? Wow, great. I also used to write Great Wall of China, and I used to get 10 out of 10. I used to pass. For many years, I always thought the Great Wall of China. Maybe you know the history when you say Great Wall of China, why that was constructed. I was told in my school, because there were two groups of people, and they were fighting for ages, and this fight never stopped. So many million people died, but the fight still went on, the war. And then there was this wise man who said, let's construct a wall. Construct a wall, the issue will be over. And they constructed a real, real huge wall, which is very long and very wide and very strong. Nobody can break this wall, Joe. Nobody. So far, nobody has broken. And there is no war. And I always thought, this is the most strongest wall in the world, whole world. Till I came to NVC. And after I did my NVC, I have some different insight about this great wall. It's not the greatest wall. The greatest wall is the one which we create between amongst ourselves. Between two human beings. Something goes wrong. You say, I don't want to see your face anymore. You are dead for me. And you walk. And I was saying, one day, maybe 1 week, 1 year, 20 years, you don't speak to yourself, each other. And that's the, you don't see this wall, it's invisible wall, but it's more stronger than the Great China Wall. Sometimes I tell a story about two brothers. And there's an elder brother, this is a story from India, by the way, but you'll enjoy this. So, an elder brother and a younger brother, they had a very close relationship. And one day something goes wrong because of the land. You know, the fight starts with the land or with the property or the home. So something went wrong, and this younger boy thought, the elder brother is cheating me. And he said something to the elder brother. And it was really painful for the elder brother to listen to what the younger one is saying. And that moment, the elder brother says, it's over. You are no more my brother. I have nothing to do with you. You are dead for me. And finish. They turn their back, walk away. The villagers were looking at what was happening. And they said, they have a blood relationship. And they will come. They will talk tomorrow. So tomorrow comes. They didn't talk. 1 week passed. They didn't talk. 1 month passes, they didn't. 1 year, 10 years, 20 years, they didn't talk to each other. After 25 years also, they were not talking to each other. One day what happened, this younger one was sitting in a, what you call, veranda? On a chair like this, reading a newspaper. a villager comes in, maybe his friend, and he says, "Do you know?" And he says, "What?" He says, "The elder one is no more. He died this morning. Do you know that?" And he says, "No, I don't know." The moment he hears this, he goes into a deep shock. His newspaper fell down, and he goes into the past, all those 25 years. He was in tears, sitting in his chair, thinking about his elder brother, and wishing that he should have gone to his brother and said, "Brother, forgive me, I was wrong. I shouldn't have said that." But it was too late. He just sat there, tears, and had no idea what to do. In the end, he says, "No, still I can do something." He gets up. He says, "At least when in India we cremate, we burn the body. So when the body is there, I'll go in front of him, fold my hands, and say to my brother, 'Brother, forgive me.'" And he stands up, he walks towards the door, and he stops there. And he starts thinking, "If I go now, what the villagers will say? What the family will say? Are you coming now? When he was alive, you never came. What's the point in coming now?" And the moment he had this thought, he goes back. Even then, he cannot go and express himself. And that's the question I want to ask all of you now. I ask this question in India. I want to ask you, how many more years do we want to have these walls up? I really want to see that they fall down. The choice is yours. That's what I'm saying. In any given situation, you have choices, and you have the choice to break or to fall this wall. And I think that's the reason I'm here. I was offering a training in Agra, in India. Agra is famous for what? Taj Mahal. And Taj Mahal is famous for?
Love.
Okay, great. You know the brilliant people, Kula Mitra. They know everything. So, Taj Mahal is in Agra. Taj Mahal is famous for love. But even the city, which is famous for love, people have conflicts. Okay? So, I was offering a training to 600 people in Agra, non-violent communication. And I shared the same story, the China Wall, the two brothers, and I asked, "How many more years you want? How long you want to keep this wall?" And there was a pin drop silence, and I was waiting for a response. But before I could get a response, what happened, there was this young guy sitting in the front row. He just stood up and walked away. And I had no idea what I said. And I was blaming myself, "Aniruddha, you are the one who teaches non-violent communication. You said something and somebody is hurt," and he left. But I was in the training, I couldn't run behind him. So I told myself, maybe he's gone for a 5 minutes break, a pee break, and he will come back. So after 5 minutes he didn't come, 10 minutes he didn't come, and I started getting more uncomfortable. I said, "Aniruddha, you are not walking your talk, you are hurting people now." After the workshop was over, the first day, he didn't come. I was having my bag, the training kit, I was walking where I was living, still thinking about this guy, "Aniruddha, why did you say that?" And something went wrong, and maybe he's in deep pain. I couldn't sleep whole night, just because of this guy, because I really want to practice non-violent. And next day I came with the same thought. I sat on the chair, and to my surprise, this man was there. And I was really happy, relieved that, he's there. So I asked, before I begin the training session, I asked people, does anybody want to say anything? The moment I said this guy, like a spring, he went up, "Yes." I said, "Yes, brother, I really want to hear you. What do you want to say?" He says, "I'm not going to speak from here. Invite me on the stage over here." So I said, "Come." So he stood next to me, and he said, "Do you want to know where I went yesterday? I said, I need to know it desperately because I couldn't sleep. And he said, "The moment you shared this story for how long you want to keep this wall, I was really touched. I remembered I had a wall between me and my elder brother for last 20 years. And after listening to your story, I thought, this is the moment I want to break the wall. I can forget the rest of the workshop, but I have to do it now. And I left. And I said, that's great, but I said, after breaking the wall, you should have come back and told me. Where were you? And he said, the story is different. The workshop was taking place in Agra, and his brother was living in Rajasthan, which is maybe 8 hours journey by bus. So as soon as I left the workshop, I went to the bus stand, got the first bus to Rajasthan. 11 o'clock at night, I was standing in front of my elder brother's door. In Rajasthan, it's a desert. So you have many layers of compound, big compound wall and a big door outside, and then the home starts. So he says, after 20 years, I was standing in front of my elder brother's home. Really scared, I had no idea what was going to happen, but he said, I had the confidence, Aniruddha, what you taught about nonviolent, and he trusted it works. So he was standing. 11 o'clock, he knocks the door at night. In India, people do that. Okay? Even at 12, they will knock, no problem. So, you knock at the door, and I was just holding my breath, what happened next? And I asked, what happened? And he says, I'm not getting this right in my English. I said, what happened? And he said, the thing which shouldn't have happened, happened then. He said, maybe the sister-in-law or the niece or the nephews, they will open the door. And that will be really easy for him. But the moment the door opened, it was the elder brother on the other side of the door. It was dark. The elder brother was there. I was holding the breath. The whole audience was. And I said, what happened next? And he said, the moment my brother looked at me, he said, you can fill in the blanks, what he said. What are you doing now and what you want? And he said, after 20 years, maybe I can complete the sentence, I can say, make it mild. I said, you idiot, what are you doing here? You replace the idiot word with whatever you want, okay, by the way. So, I don't know the English words for that. So, he says, Aniruddha, the moment I heard those sentences from my brother's mouth, I thought, why did you come here? Just because Aniruddha said a story doesn't mean you have to do it. And he said, even after 20 years, the anger was there. I could see even after 20 years, I took the initiative, came in front of his door, the anger still was there. And he said, I just wanted to come back, run away from the place. Like I was feeling a moment ago, to run away from here. So, he just wanted to run away from that place. But somewhere he said, Aniruddha, I trusted you. I trusted what you taught me. Listen to the beauty behind the words. If the person is saying, you idiot, why did you come? If you focus on that word idiot, you are in pain. But listen to the beauty behind that word. How much pain when the brother is saying, you idiot, what are you doing after 20 years over here? Listen to his pain. For 20 years, even he's got that pain. And he can't forget it. So, the brother, I said, what happened next? He said, I just trusted what you said and I stood there. And he said, what do you want now? In NVC, in nonviolent communication, that's a very important question. What do you want? What are you needing? Everybody has some needs, a universal need. So, he understood, brother is not asking something different, he's asking what I am needing. And he said, brother, I don't want anything from you. I need a very small thing from you. And he said, tell me what you want now. And he said, brother, I need some connection. I need some closeness. And I just want to hug you. And he stood there, waiting for the response. The brother was shocked. He didn't expect this response. He stood there in tears, had no idea what to do for some moment, and after maybe 30 seconds, he opened his arm, he said, come. And they both hugged each other. They were hugging each other, and I don't know. even now after maybe 4 years, I'm in tears when I remember that. And as they were hugging each other, the elder brother said something in the ears of the younger one. He said, in Hindi we say Chote. Chote is the elder one. He says, Chote, I was desperately waiting to hear these words for last 20 years. I need to be hugged, or I need a hug. That's the beauty. For 20 years he wanted to say these words, let's come together, let's connect, let's hug each other. But we are programmed, we are trained in such a way, we say something different when we mean something different. We say, idiot, what do you want? Why can't he say, okay, welcome, let's hug each other? No, it's really difficult. So that's why I'm saying, beauty behind the words. Don't listen to that word, idiot. Just listen behind the pain behind that word. Are you still with me?
Yes.
Great. So next time somebody says something really harsh, just enjoy that beauty. Yeah. I have a friend. They were married for 26 years. After 26 years, they were separated. And the cause was a newspaper. This guy used to read newspaper all the time. And the wife needed connection. She used to say, why can't we sit together holding hands, having a cup of tea or chai, the way we used to do 26 years back? Now you come from the office, you hold the newspaper, we are sitting, she brings the cup of tea, it's on the table, but the newspaper was in between them. And one day she got really mad. She tore the newspaper. She said, I want to talk to you. And that was the day they separated. And after 26 years, few years back, his ex-wife died. And this guy was in deep pain. He said, I was with this woman for 26 years, and now she is no more. But I really want to go and see her for the last time. And I asked him, then what stops you? He says, no, I don't know what to do. I said, if you are feeling you want to, just go ahead and do it. So he goes to that place before the funeral, and his daughter is there. So she greets the father, and the father says, I'm really sad, and this and that. And he says, I really want to see her last for the last time, and just stand there and say, please forgive me. And he really wanted to do it from his heart. And the daughter takes out a letter from her pocket and says, this is a letter from Mama. Before she died, she wrote something. And I'm going to tell you what that is. Before she died, she says, if I die, I don't want to see his face. See that he doesn't see my face. I just don't know how you do it. Not you, we. How we do it. Even after death, people don't want to be seen. It's that kind of anger, and I really want to see that all these walls, they fall down. What I'm talking about is families. Individual pain. Individual makes family. And families make society. Just imagine what's happening in family is so painful. How it might look like in the society, when there are so many people from different caste, creed, religion, country, color, they come together, they must be creating a big, big mess, I guess. And as Kula Mitra said, I come from India, and in India, we have caste system. In India, we have the caste system, and in that caste system, the society has given me a very beautiful label called untouchable. So I am from that community, untouchable. I don't know how many people know what untouchability literally means or is it is, but I can tell you in few sentences. Untouchability or untouchable literally means not to touch. So I was sharing the story of a hug. Now you understand how painful it is for me when people don't touch me. Even I want to be hugged, but when people don't touch me, it's really painful. And why I shouldn't be touched is because I am impure, I am lower than the animal, I'm really dirty. And that's the reason in India people don't touch us. That's the literal meaning of untouchability. I come from a place called Pune. Karunika is sitting there. He was with me there for 5 years and we worked together. And he can tell you, when the Britishers were there in India, there used to be a king called Peshwa in Pune. And Peshwa, he had declared that in Pune, if there are untouchables, they had to follow certain rules. And one of the rules was, if an untouchable is walking on the road, he needs to put an earthen pot in his neck, near hang over here, and a broom behind his buttocks. So when he walks, so his footprints should be erased by the broom, because even our footprints are impure. If a higher caste person walks from that footprint, he becomes impure. So that's what our people were doing in Pune few years back, or many years back, you can say. And we were not allowed to spit on the road. In India, people spit everywhere. But untouchables were not allowed to do that. If we wanted to spit, that was the pot. You spit in your own pot, but you are not supposed to. The higher caste could spit. So I'm glad that we contributed to the cleanliness of Pune. But can you see how humiliating that could be for us, maybe my ancestors, wearing an earthen pot and a broom behind and walking on the street? That was not all. Suppose I am walking on the street and Kulamitra is a higher caste person and I see him coming. So I had to make a point that even my shadow doesn't fall on him. Even if my shadow falls on you, he becomes an impure person and he goes home and cleanses himself. I will tell you how you do that. Kulamitra was talking about the common village well. If I go, it's a drought and there is no water. At night, I'm hiding and go and get some water, fetch some water from the well, the common village well, where untouchables are not allowed to go. And if the higher caste people come to know that I have done that, I've touched the water, first thing, they will stone me to death. That's the first thing. Finish him off. Second, they have to purify the well, the water, because it's impure. And now I'm going to tell you how you do it. So you go out, find a cow, get cow's urine, and put that urine into the well. Because cow's urine is more pure than me. Can you see how we might have gone through in our life? Yeah. But that's the truth. We were not allowed to go into the temples because we were untouchables, impure. If we enter the temple, the God who is the, what you call, whole or the most powerful one. But we were more stronger than him, I think. Because if we enter the temple, he also becomes impure. So they put urine on him and purify the God. So we were not allowed to go into the temple. So we were that dirty and that unclean. And it's dirt. Even the dirty is better. We were worse than that. When I was a small kid, where I used to live in Jabalpur, not in Pune, Karunika, there were not many families who had kids. So I had only 3 or 4 small friends. And amongst them was my best friend. So I used to go to his house to play. And I don't know, whenever I went there, his mother used to say, "Wow, come in. Hello, how are you?" And just play outside. I thought maybe she's cleaning or something. And so that was okay with me. I was a small kid. So I used to play outside. One day what happened, that happened for maybe 1 or 2 years. I used to go play, come back home. One day I came back home. And my mother said, "Hi Aniruddha, would you like to have some tea, chai?" I said, "No mom, I don't want, I just had my tea." And she said, "Where did you have your tea?" I said, "My friend's house." And she says, "Which kind of cup she gave you?" And I had no idea why she was asking. I said, yeah, a nice cup. And she says, does that cup had a ear, or what you call, handle? In India we say ear. You hold the cup with the ear. So she asked, does that cup had the ear? And I said, no, it was a broken cup without a ear. And my mother says, don't you go to his house next time. And I had no idea why she said that. And then she told me the story. If you are an untouchable, in every higher caste person's house, you have a special cup, which is broken, deliberately broken. So that any untouchable comes, you offer the tea to this person in the broken cup. So this is the story of a broken cup, without a ear. And I loved this friend so much, but after that I've never seen him. Yeah. And when I am here in Buddha Field, I go to Buddha Field Cafe, I pay the money, I get a cup with the ear intact. Can you imagine how big joy that is for me? Because I get the acceptance immediately. I can sit on any table over there. People are sitting around. I can sit next to anyone and eat, and nobody will walk away. That's a big joy for me. I can stand here in front of you and share my story, and you people are still there. I could see there are so many people with tears in their eyes. Even I can't see you properly because my eyes are full. But that's the joy of connection. That's the love I'm receiving from all of you. And I'm so grateful for all of you for giving me that love, that acceptance, that connection. You might be wondering, if I come from this untouchable community or Dalit community, how come I am here? What's the change? So, there were hundreds and thousands of Dalits in India who were going through this kind of treatment for last maybe 10,000 years. On 14th October 1956, one of the untouchable, who was the most educated person in whole India, his name is Dr. Babasaheb Ambedkar. When I say started my talk, Jai Bhim. So Jai is victory. Bhim is his name, Bhim Rao. So we always start by saying Jai Bhim, victory to Babasaheb, who changed my life. On 14th of October 1956, overnight, this man, Dr. Babasaheb Ambedkar, who is my leader, we call him Bodhisattva Dr. Babasaheb Ambedkar. So he was born in an untouchable community, and he said, even though I am born in a Hindu religion, I will not die in one. And on 14th October, he converted himself to Buddhism. He said, I want a religion which will give dignity to my people, a religion which will give equality to my people, a religion which will give respect to my people. And Babasaheb found that Buddhism is the only religion which gives equality, freedom and respect to all. There is no discrimination. So first he converted, and on 14th October, I guess, I don't know how to work the figures, but maybe 600,000, Karunika, is that right? 600,000 untouchable, huh?
Many.
That's just a figure, by the way. So many converted, we call it a mass conversion. And just imagine, over a night, all those people who were untouchables for 10,000 years, their life was transformed. We got back our dignity, our respect, our freedom. Freedom to express ourselves. And maybe that's the reason I'm here. If Babasaheb wouldn't have done that, I wouldn't be here. After the mass conversion, in 6 week time, Babasaheb died. All the Dalits or untouchables were illiterate, no education. They had no idea what Buddhism was. Just the leader said, convert, and they followed. But we had no idea what meditation was. We had no idea what the Dharma teachings were, how to practice Buddhism. We just stayed like that. And 1979 and 1980, around that period, 78-79, Bhante Sangharakshita, who is the founder of Friends of the Western Buddhist Order, we are all the member of that order, he sent one few of his senior disciples to India just to connect with these Dalit people, because he knew they don't know what dharma is. And that's how they came to India. They started teaching dharma and meditation classes. And since then, as Kulamitra said, I've been following these people. I've never left them. And I'm so grateful, Kulamitra and all Lokamitra and all those who came that time, for transforming my life. Kulamitra said, I speak very good English. But I can tell you, these people came to India. When I say these, they are not separate than me, but for this moment I'm saying, like, they came and they taught us meditation. I was 14 then. They taught us meditation, what the dharma is, but above that, what they gave me is something different, which has changed my life. I remember Lokamitra, who's the senior most order member in the FWBO, he's still in India, works for us, with us, and he told me, Aniruddha, meditation and dharma is important, but at the same time, education is also important. Every evening, he used to come to my home, walking, and he used to take out my geography book or history book or maths book, and he used to teach me. So, in FWBO, we only don't teach meditation and dharma, we also teach sometime education to the students. So, that's how I've learned my English, and that's how I've educated. In my community, I'm one of the most educated, I can say. I did a MBA degree in marketing in 1989. I've been working in the corporate sector. And I'm so grateful for Baba Sahib and to FWBO and to Karuna for supporting us throughout this journey. After this mass conversion, we got... before that, we got independence from the Britishers. You were ruling us for 200 years. Yes. And when I say that, I know what goes there. Oh, now he's starting about domination. 200 years of domination. But let me tell you, don't listen to the word. Listen to the beauty behind those words. And the beauty is coming now. For us... the Britishers were like gods for the untouchable. You must be wondering why. Because we were lower than the animals before you came. Nobody allowed us to come into their house. Nothing. We were not humans. When the Britishers came, in India we say, one of our order members, Subhuti, in his talk he says, Indians, ordinary people have five senses. Indians have a sixth sense, and that is a sense of caste. If you come to India, you cannot see the caste, but we can immediately, within 30 seconds, I can tell which caste he comes from. So we have that extra sense of caste. So, where was I? Yeah, the Britishers. I was just testing. Are you with me? Joe is. Yeah, thank you, Joe. Yeah, so the Britishers came and they didn't have this sixth sense of caste. So for them, everybody was equal. And the war was on. They set up the ammunition factories, the explosive factories. And who was going to work in the explosive factory? The higher caste, they say, no, we are the mediator of God. We don't do these things. The warriors said, no, we are the warriors, we don't do this. The Vaishyas or the businessmen, they said, our job is to do business, not to produce explosives or manufacture bullets and bombs. So, the people left were untouchables. So the Britishers came, they had no idea who we were. They said, would you like to have a job? And we said, yes. And all the untouchables, 99% people working in explosive factories in India right now are untouchables. But that gave us the job, money and dignity. I know it's not a good thing to manufacture explosive, but we got it through that way. Sometimes it's good. The beauty behind the explosive. Yeah. Yeah. My father was 12 years old. I wasn't born then. He was 12. So he was walking in front of an explosive factory, Khadki, ammunition factory. Karunika knows that. He used to take his six-seater, the auto rickshaw, every day from there. So he was walking in front of that big, huge gate, and there was this British officer who was standing there, and he looked at my father and he said, "Son, what do you want? What are you looking for?" And my father said, "I need a job." And this guy says, "How old are you?" And he says, "I am 12. And he said, "Sorry, we can't give you a job. You are too small. We need at least 14 years. My father said, "But I really desperately need. I need to support my family." And he waited for a minute. He said, "Just a minute. I'll take you in. There's another guy. He will ask you, what's your age? Just tell 14. And that's how my father got in. He got the job. He used to tell me the first day on his job, he used to carry the boxes of bullets on his shoulder. And once he had a job, he was promoted. Later on, I was born. And every time my father told me, "Aniruddha, if you want to succeed in your life, just take education. Just hold on to the dharma. That's the only thing which will survive you in your life." And which I have done so far. I've never let my education or my dharma or my dharma brothers separate. 5 more minutes. Oh, I've got 2 more pages. Okay. See, this is what happens in India. In India, people say 20 minutes and we talk for 2 hours. After independence, Dr. Babasaheb Ambedkar, being the most educated person in India, he wrote the Constitution of India, because there was no other higher caste person more educated than Babasaheb. He was the only person who could write the Constitution of India. Just see the, what you call? Paradox. Thanks. Paradox. A person, a community who was not allowed to take education, one of the person from the same community writes the Constitution of India. And I'm glad he did, because he was the person who gave us the right to educate. He gave us the freedom, he gave us the dignity, and he gave us the respect back because of the Constitution. So, untouchability does not exist in India on paper. It exists in the mind of people. By law, it's offensive. If you practice untouchability, it's a crime. So on paper it exists, it doesn't exist, but it exists in the mind of people, and that's where we are working right now. Even though I was educated, even though I did meditation for last 25 years, I knew Dharma very well. But this ghost of untouchability never left me. I used to tell myself, "You are an untouchable." I believed I was untouchable, and I behaved like one. So, the problem is not out there. Those people who say, "You are an untouchable," I believed it. But now I've learned another thing. After doing the nonviolent communication training, which Karuna funded, I'm so grateful, because of that training, a big transformation took place in my life, and this ghost of untouchability is no more there in my life. Because now I have realized what I think I become. If I think I am an untouchable, I am. Nobody can make me untouchable without my permission. And this is what I have learned now. And it's such a big thing, like it gives me the freedom. It gives me the freedom, I can breathe. And I can say I'm not an untouchable anymore, because it's just my thought. So when I say, see the beauty behind the words, so it's not about what other person is saying. Now I'm going to the depth. Just listen to what you are saying to yourself. What you say to yourself, you become. And I have learned it a very hard way after 40 years, that I am a human being, I need my dignity, I need my respect, I need my freedom, and nobody can make me untouchable. There's a beautiful story, and I'm going to finish with that story, hopefully in time. This story goes, I've read it somewhere in the book. You have these parks, big huge park. In India we don't call park, we call garden. So park, and outside the park there are these people who sell ice cream, the big, you have these big cars or vans. In India you have the man who pushes the small thing. But at the same time you have this guy who sells the balloon, the filled with gas. So one day, there was a park, imagine a park, and on one side of the, on the gate of the park, there was this guy who was selling balloons with gas and the thread and it's going up. And there was this small black boy standing on the side, looking at the balloon. He had no money in the pocket to buy the balloon, but only thing he can do is just enjoy the beauty when it's there. So he was enjoying that beauty of the balloon, how they are going up, and he thinks, there is a red color balloon, there is a blue color balloon, a green balloon, a yellow balloon, but there is no black balloon. And he has a question and he says, I need to know the answer. So he walks across the street, gets hold of this guy who was selling the balloon, and he says, Uncle, I have got a question. So this guy says, yes, what do you want to know? He says, Uncle, there is a red balloon, a green balloon, a yellow balloon, and a blue balloon, but there is no black balloon. So this man looks, he sees his color, this is a black guy, he understands, he looks, he hears the beauty behind his words. And he says, son, it's not important what color is outside. It is important what is inside the balloon that takes you up, not the color. And that's a big lesson for me. I was untouchable, that was the first thing. And I always said, I am a black, I am a bit fat, and nobody would love me. That's the reality. And I lived with that reality for so many years. But this story of balloon has changed my life. It's not important how I look from outside, but it's important what is inside. And I think in my life, the man who was selling the balloon was Baba Saheb. He told me, Aniruddha, it's not important what color or what caste or what religion you are born. It's important what is inside. And then I had few other people who were selling balloons and teaching me. And one of them is Karuna Trust, who has really contributed to my life. And I'm so grateful for all your contributions, for enriching my life and giving meaning to me and my people. And what I have learned now, I'm sharing this with my people, thousands of people. Every day I offer trainings on nonviolent communication. What I've shared with you, I shared with all these untouchable people. Just to tell them what you think you become, don't think you are an untouchable. And then I offer them the training. So I'm just expressing my deep gratitude for Karuna. And there are people I just want to mention. Start with Peter. Peter just showed, these are the people who are contributing to my life. And if you want to know more about Karuna, don't ask me. I don't know much, but these are the people. So Peter is there. Andrea, stand up, please. Come over here, Andrea. Run. Come, run. Yeah. So, she is the one who invited. It's her idea why I am here. It's her. And John, where are you? Come, don't feel shy. That's John, that's Andrea. Come over here. And Joe. And Kulamitra. And who else is there? Manjuswara. And Karunika also, I know. Karunika is there, he is from Karuna as well. So, why I am asking these people to be with me on the stage? Just want to express my deep gratitude for all of you, because you have made difference in my life. Thank you. Thank you so much for listening to me.
Thank you very, very much, Anirudh. That was an extremely moving talk. I don't know about you, but personally, I like the look on the outside anyway, but I think we all saw the beauty on the inside. And we're very, very grateful for your talk in moving us. If anybody feels moved to help practically, please come and see our Karenau representatives. We rely on people's time and energy to raise money, so it might be something you'd be willing to consider. You might just have a few bob in your pocket you want to give them, that's fine too. You've heard where it goes. Please help us to help people in India. I also believe that you'd be willing to answer questions if people have any. Yes?
Yeah.
We've still got time. By Indian standards, that was a very short talk. In India, no one would really want to go yet, so I hope you'll feel like staying, and maybe... Is there a mic for the audience as well? No? So if anybody wants to ask a question, either stand up or even come forward to the mic, and one of us will try.
Ask in simple English.
But before we do that, I think maybe one more round of applause for Anirudh.
Thank you so much. I wish I was almost in tears, and I wish that this round of applause my brothers and sisters in India can hear. It's for them. I'm just a representative of them. Thank you so much.
So, any